This is an eavesdropping conversation. I am Juliet Fraser, and today I'm talking to Sivan Horrocks-Hapayan. Welcome, Sivan.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
It's really nice to see you. Thank you. So I normally start with this question. How do you describe yourself as a musician?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I would describe myself as someone that works across art forms. I compose for orchestra, also for custom electronics, MIDI controllers, and a lot for the voice, for actors, and for my own voice as well. So I perform with a lever harp and electronics, and that's what I'll be bringing to eavesdropping. But if I was talking about it from a more creative perspective, I'm just really fascinated with storytelling, and I always have been. And for me, it just depends on what story I want to tell that guides me into which art form I want to work with. So it's not always music, even. I spoke to someone last night who was telling me about branding, which always makes me think of like herds of cattle. And I'm really clueless about describing myself, but they were advocating the approach where you make references. So, you know, she's like Björk meets John Adams, which I'm not at all, by the way, but sort of trying to make it easy for people to form a picture based on what they know already. And I'm not sure, I'm interested to know what you think of that. But for me, I think so many people have their own different references. That also is meaningless. People have described certain pieces I've written, you know, compared it to Björk when I was like in my early 20s. And I'd actually never heard a Björk song knowingly anyway. So, you know, so what does that reference mean if the composer themselves doesn't make that reference? But yeah, have you ever had that experience?
Yeah, I suppose so. I think perhaps for myself, but also generally, I think there's a bit of a resistance in classical music to kind of to reference our work in terms of other people. I don't know if it's a fear of being pigeonholed, or it might even be a sort of slight snobbery about not wanting to be like somebody else, because we're always under so much pressure to be very, very individual. But yeah, I suppose if I think about the people that I have been compared to, there's definitely a hackle or two that goes up because I feel a little bit misunderstood in a way. But of course, I mean, to be more sensible about it, it is a very practical way of situating yourself for other people to understand a bit what you do. I loved what you said about being driven by storytelling, perhaps more than anything else. I wondered if you would like to tell us the story of your creative journey, how you have ended up doing what it is that you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, it is all about embracing imagination, isn't it? I think that's what art does for both the creator and the person experiencing it as well. And I mean, if we want to go all the way back, I come from a family where creativity sort of runs through it. But myself and my sister are the only ones I've met that made a profession of it as musicians. But also I was very lucky that I was born on the Suffolk coast. So I grew up benefiting from the legacy that Imogen Holst and Benjamin Britten and Peter Peers left behind. It meant that I went to live concerts from a young age, and I just got the bug, you know, that sort of excitement of seeing things, yeah, just coming into being basically, you know, before your eyes. And then seeing what backstage is like as well, and the anticipation. And that's something which, you know, the last few years I've not experienced. I've not been able to perform for obvious reasons because of the pandemic. And my relationship with art has changed as a result. I've had to adapt. But yeah, those were my early beginnings.
I'm quite interested in the different training routes that our artists have taken, because it seems that the common thread would be that a sort of maverickness in that. So I'd love to hear a bit about that.
It's really nice of you to say Maverick, actually. You're the first person I've met that's referred to a female artist as a maverick.
Oh,
It's
really?
usually
I
men
didn't know it was gendered. Oh, dear. Not another one.
that get burdened with being a genius or a maverick. But yeah, it's a fun, I think it's quite a gendered word, but maybe I'm hypersensitive. There we go.
Well, we can reclaim it. That's fine.
Yeah. With my training, it's been, I think, always a mix of having some real specialist support, but also with my varied interests, a lot of self-taught stuff as well. Yeah, I didn't enjoy the sort of GCSE level syllabus very well. I mean, I enjoyed it in the sense that it was the first time I started composing and realized that I could actually train as a composer.
Right.
But I didn't enjoy the sort of having to just learn and regurgitate. You know, it wasn't a creative sort of approach. I then, for my higher education, I studied a music degree, which was very theoretical, so it wasn't practical. So those were the elements that I had to make for myself. I was at Cambridge University, so I was near to London. So at the weekends, I would cycle to the train station and get a train and go to various jazz clubs and just listen or try and join in because it just wasn't happening for me in Cambridge at the time. But I ended up, yeah, just creating opportunities for myself, making recordings, benefiting from connections I had with, other students that were at conservatoires in London. Got to use their recording facilities and yeah, recorded some song cycles and so on. Yeah, and so as a result, I feel like I feel well equipped in the sense that I know how to train myself, but at the same time, I know that I've not had the same kind of training as someone that went to a conservatoire and spent hours and hours, working consistently on their craft in that way. I've had more of jumping from different thing to different project, but I still do that. My projects are still sort of. I still have lots of different collaborations on the go, and I guess that might be what just keeps me stimulated creatively
Yeah.
anyway.
Which leads me really tidily onto my next question, which is to ask you where you're focusing your creative energies, where you're finding stimulation at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, the last few years with the pandemic, with not being form, like I said, and projects falling through and not getting back up again in some cases. My relationship with music really changed, and I had a period at first where I completely lost my creative urge to do anything, which I've never had. I've had writer's block plenty of times, but I've wanted to write something, so I've never had not wanting to create anything before. When I did find myself in a creative mindset again, it was with instructional text, so no music notation in the classical sense of like a stave and dots on the score and so on. No graphic scores either. It was really sort of wandering into the realms of performance art, maybe, or even conceptual art. And I do create scores which I refer to as Augenmusik or eye music, which is a tradition which goes back to the Renaissance of these kind of illustrative musical scores, where sometimes the shape of them dictates how they're performed. Or with mine, I've got really interested in sort of cutting holes into the score to reveal notes beneath, so that much like the Very Hungry Caterpillar, you have a meaning on one page, and then as soon as you turn the page, some of that remains, and the context changes, and it has a new meaning. So I love creating those, and they're quite sort of time consuming to conceive and then produce. But yeah, this sort of new venture where I'm just kind of imagining an event, or imagining an action for someone to perform. Yeah, it feels kind of poetic, and it makes sense to me that it came out of a time when I was just imagining things because events weren't happening. So it was all just what you hold in your head. So now I'm at the stage of deciding, you know, should I then turn them into performance pieces, or should they be something that could be published that you read and you enjoy?
What I sense in the way that you're talking about scores is both playfulness, but also a sort of, this is a bit of a heavy word, but a sort of democratic element to it, in that, you know, traditional classical music notation is very exclusive in the sense that you have to have a lot of training to decipher it. I'm wondering if those new terrains of experimenting with more open sorts of notation are driven by an attraction to something more democratic, or if it's more fed just by your own sense of playfulness, of wanting to be playful in the creative act yourself.
Yeah, it's both. I think you're right. It's definitely more accessible when you use a common language. Definitely. Also, in terms of the playfulness, I mean, myself, like I work with all kinds of notation as a performer. I'm working with a wonderful jazz saxophonist, Trish Clues, at present, and so she's giving me charts, you know, lead sheets, essentially, where the information is filled out by the people that are improvising and so on. And when I've written for jazz musicians, I try my best to work with the language that they communicate with. And likewise, when I'm writing for a soloist compared to an orchestra, I'll put in different types of directions and language. And with all of those, I still work very hard at that. I don't feel particularly fluent in any of them. So I think that's why it feels more like a game to me, or it feels like a visual form, because I'm not reading it as fluently as I'd read a book in the English language.
Yeah.
But I'm, you know, I read it and I'll write it, but depending on who I'm working with, because I like to collaborate so widely, I really do have to think quite carefully about what is included in a score. In terms of text specifically as well, I like instructions. I mean, it was useful for me. It was, you know, during the pandemic, it was just instructing me to do something or anything at all. Right. But I've noticed also there's definitely an interest in rites and rituals. I've seen lots of artists sort of creating things along those lines, and even on Instagram and various things, there are hashtags saying, you know, daily rites and so on. It might be someone running a bath or something, but it interests me, you know, what our contemporary ideas of rituals are. And I had a lovely residency in Coventry last year with my collaborator Creedson, and we created a bunch of rites for the future of the Coventry Canal, which is really fun.
Oh, interesting. This year, our festival forum topic is experiments in defiance. I was wondering if defiance is a word that resonates with you in terms of your creative practice.
I'm not sure. Not in my, I wouldn't say defiance is part of my creative practice. It has been a part of my training, I think.
My
sort of own motivation. So yeah, sometimes I feel like if something could be done better, I will prove myself that I can do that, or something like that, in defiance of a situation. And then in terms of as a profession or in social structures, yes, I would say that there are things that I still find need to be challenged, such as notions of canon, which leave out a lot of people, particularly, well, yeah, the sense of how community creates music, not just individuals. They are one of a group, and through whatever process history puts on things and their excellence in many cases, but they wouldn't be what they were it not for the context and the community that they were part of. So I think, yeah, being able to cultivate those connections is really important. So yeah, I mean, I started with talking about gender imbalance, but that's a clear example of where even women that were popular in their own lifetimes, or even if they were under pseudonyms, have been written out of history. And at the same time, when it comes to thinking about history, I'm not sure how helpful that is, just because I feel like we should live in the present rather than the past, and we can't safeguard for the future. However, I still do think about it when I'm working with up and coming female composers, and we'll talk about whether they're on Wikipedia, for example, because that's surely an example of how history is written. It's a database, and it's not just emerged. That said, I wouldn't know how to do a Wikipedia entry. I need to learn. But yeah, it's a collection of people writing things down, which lots of people refer to.
I believe it's very easy, and Heather Roach, the clarinetist, organized a day to get women on Wikipedia. I think it was a kind of office flash mob situation where she arranged a meeting place for people to come, and together they blitzed various historical and contemporary female musicians, predominantly artists perhaps as well, to get them up on Wikipedia. So we can certainly investigate her tips for how to get more of us up online.
That's an excellent plan. Yeah, I'll have to learn from her and advise students and so on how to plan for that sort of thing.
To wrap up, Savan, I'm wondering if you can tantalize us very gently with a few words about what we might expect to hear at your performance for us.
Well, I'm going to bring some of the MIDI controllers built by Crewdson, who I mentioned earlier. So I think I should definitely perform some of the rites that we wrote for Coventry, called Rites for Crossing Water. So yeah, you'll hear a sort of one person version with these sort of beautiful MIDI controllers that he's created. Some, like, one is called the Sonic Bonnet, which is a headset made out of metal jewelry, kind of resembling or a bit inspired by Armenian headdresses, reflecting my dual heritage, Armenian and English. And all of the metal is conductive, so I can touch the headdress and trigger different sounds. So I'm hoping to bring something along like that, and with the harp, because it's a lever harp, kind of based on the Celtic design, there'll definitely be folk elements, perhaps both English and Armenian, representing the heritage that I've mentioned. And maybe I'm really hoping that, because this is a celebration of experimentation, I'm hoping that by then, in the next month, some of these instructional pieces that I've been talking about could get an airing, something. It would be just really lovely for that to be its first sort of setting.
Yeah, we'd love that. We'd love you to test stuff out on us. Yes, please.
Yeah, oh, great. Yeah, thank you.
Well, that sounds fantastic. I can't wait to hear it. Thank you so much for talking with us. And for the listeners, you can join us for Savan's performance on the opening night of the Eavesdropping Festival. That's Thursday, the 30th of March at Cafe Otto. And you can find out more about what we do by visiting www.eavesdropping.london. Thank you so much, Savan, for talking with me. It's lovely to see you.
Thanks. Yeah, see you there.
See you there. You have been listening to an eavesdropping conversation. Our new jingle was composed for us by Iza Otoya.